You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Your host, Dr. Michelle, and we are walking this road together, 573-4-BREAD-4. You are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call, you can text, you can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. And now you can become a friend of the show. You just log on to breadboxmedia.com, follow the link, friend of the show. Find Dr. Michelle, and there you go. So this is awesome and exciting and new, and it will be developing as time goes on as well. You can also get previous podcasts by logging on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. We have so many different topics and subjects, and so they're always timely because it's all about the mind and the soul and the body, and that's all we have. So not just all we have, that's what we are. So as life goes on, yeah, you visit different things at different times. I know with me, there are times when I've decided to get on, let's say, a nutrition kick or a supplement kick or an herb kick or whatever, and I get all kinds of books and things, and I deal with it at the time. There was a period of time when I was going through an enormous amount of stress, and I could feel like I was losing the physical battle of that stress. And so I thought, wait a minute, I cannot get rid of the stress that I have coming at me. I can't get rid of the things happening in life. I can't get rid of people's illnesses or other problems. However, I can try to attack it from a different point of view. I can build up the parts of my body that normally will succumb to that, like the adrenal glands, and as much as I can. And some things you don't have control over, like if your mind is so active that you can't sleep well, you don't have control over that. But so what I did was I got a lot of information. I just searched and searched and searched. And again, it's good to do this with someone who's guided. It's really not the best idea to do it for yourself, even if you have the knowledge and information. But I've studied this since long before. I studied this since I was in my teens. It was something I was brought up on, something I was interested in. And long before I ever thought about being a physician, I did a lot of study. So I understood a lot as far as supplementation, herbs, nutrition. However, I also took and a lot of college courses in that. And then once I did medicine, began to understand the systems of the body, the enzyme systems of the body, the biochemistry, all that. So it does help to go with someone that has some information about these things when you're talking about supplements. A little sidetrack here, because you get online, they're going to want to sell you something, but you have to just call. It takes a lot of mental power to keep calling through, knowing that out of 100 you're going to click on to get some advice, you might find 5 out of that 100 that aren't trying to sell you something. So there are those people who are devoted to the truth about about nutrition and about, and they're very learned. They're biochemists. They've been doing this forever. There's no financial dog of the hunt other than they make their living by being good clinicians. But the point being is that I attacked it from that side. And so, and that was helpful. So I looked at it and tried to do what I could nutritionally to keep my adrenals from sinking. So if I needed a little extra B vitamin, a little extra vitamin C, and knowing, understanding, so I wouldn't be out of balance, I researched until I found that way to go. Now I'm telling you that because we cannot deal with the outside factors. What do we have control over really? And what happens to you when you are just, you're walking a tightrope and you've got things, you're juggling things enough to where you're doing okay. And then you get, something kind of comes at you from left field and you get a little wobbly. and something else from right field, and something else from above, and something else from below. And pretty soon you are exhausted. You can't think straight. You feel completely overwhelmed. You feel completely dejected. You are not sure what's going to happen, how it's going to happen, if you can take it any longer. So what do? Well, we do things because we get through it. First of all, the most number one important thing is to remember that we have a plethora of examples from the most atheistic philosopher, let's say, to the most religious philosopher, to the most current day survivor of some atrocity, to all of our saints, on people who have gone through things that you cannot even begin to imagine, and they live to tell the story. Now, they may have not the best life. I was reading a story recently that I'll share for you. Well, first, let me tell you, we're going to see what Robert Wicks, in his 10 Lessons for Inner Strength for Challenging Times, what he says now, as we're going into chapter 2, after an inordinate amount of time on chapter 1, we're going to go into some thoughts about how to kind of reset your buttons a little bit. He's a very awesome guy. As I said, I like him because he is he's the people who take care of the people. He's the person who takes care of the people who are the first responders in traumatic events. He also takes care of people in traumatic events. It's a very difficult and draining thing to do, is to work with people who are one after another suffering trauma. And it's not because they're bad, they're wonderful. But if you have that gift, that empathy to work with someone with trauma, or to just be there for someone with trauma, it still is a reality that you can get fatigued, you can get worn out, you can just feel like you just can't see one more piece of tragedy. You have to remain a balance. Same with your basic firefighter. You know, there's a reason they have the shifts they have. There's a reason they have interventions they have. There's a reason they have different absences of leave and counselors available, because the responders are only human. And they have physical limitations, emotional limitations, spiritual limitations, and mental limitations. And when I say spiritual limitations, God does not limit you. So you do not have that, but you are only human. And you only access through your humanity the gifts and grace that God gives you. And there's a point that you have to, part of that is understanding that you must keep in a balance, because you are made the way you are. God can do whatever he wants to do. The energy of God, I always keep saying it is a he, but there is no gender to God. God does not have a gender. Only the natural world has genders. That's it. God does not. God is God. So he's Yahweh. He is the I am. And so he's the I am for me, and he's the I am for you. And it doesn't matter what our genders are. He is I am. So anyway, so we're going to look at those things. And I was on a story, so somehow I got sidetracked from my story. But all this to say is that when I know that I was getting overwhelmed, I knew I couldn't continue the way I was going. And I knew that I was kind of breaking down physically, that it was only a matter of time before something was going to give. It's like that too. If you're bad, look at some of our Father Damien, who wanted to work with the lepers. There was only a matter of time he contracted leprosy. You are only human. So there's a time where you can find that extra bit of strength and you can keep on going against all odds. But if you become aware of something, you can't make the decision for yourself that it isn't going to affect you. You have to, if you become aware, then it's up to you to try to be balanced. However, I was going to give you the story. So I'm looking up the story. I happened to see a picture of a woman, a pioneer woman, who had tattoos on her face. And evidently she and her sister were captured by a Native American tribe, and one that was not known for their compassion and caring for their slaves. And she was something like 10 and her sister was like 7. And she watched her whole family slaughtered, and she did not die. And she was taken, and I think her sister was too. They were starved. They were put into this, they were basically slaves. They hardly ate. They really were a mess. And at some particular point, she was either traded over to another Native American tribe who treated her like their own, kept her into a family, and loved her so much so that when she finally was discovered as a near adult, she couldn't readjust. But the point is that the telling of the physical tragedies that she went through in a time where there was no air conditioning, where there was no anything, there wasn't regular, you know, there was just, you were what you were. The stuff that we would say, oh, you can't possibly survive that. She survived it. A little teeny girl who saw one trauma after another, was beaten, and just like Saint Paquita, you know, they survive it. And many of them grow into a great old age. She did not, but a lot of hers was despondency because she did attempt to come back into her race, the white man's world, as it was talked about in that time. And she was utterly unhappy because her love and her home was with the Native American family, who took her as their own eventually. And she watched her sister die also because her sister could not withstand it. So here's a woman who, under the most horrible circumstances, did live through it. She didn't succumb. And we are so pampered that we think, you know, we just have too much definitions of what we can't get through. So we're going to see what we can get through, how you can deal with your overwhelmingness today in 2016. And we will get to that with a little help of Robert J. Wicks on the other side of the break. So you can call 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and we're together today on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking this road together as always. I get anxious. You get anxious. I have stress. You have stress. I have tragedies in my life. You have tragedies in your life. We have happinesses and joys, and I have happinesses and joys. And every day I can feel like there is no happiness and joy ever. It's not going to happen. It never happened. It won't ever happen again. And all I do in 1 second, something occurs. A hummingbird almost knocks me over, believe it or not. or you know, some beautiful thing occurs. And it's my choice at that moment to take a 1 second of breath. Even if you're so worn out that you say, I can't feel this, but you know what? Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And sometimes for some people, you might be that person. Just saying the name Jesus, or Jesus, I trust in you, it brings some kind of lightness of being. It brings some kind of weightlessness internally that causes you to have that pillow, that really walking through the pastures in that valley. He's leading you to that water, even if it's for a second. And do not be fooled about what a split second can do in your life, because many of you already know what a split second can do in the tragedy realm. You know that 1 minute you're pregnant, the next minute you're not, and not even minute. You just get up, feel something, and it's over. And then you're left to deal with the devastation. You know what that's like. I know you do, because you tell me about it. And because I watch it in my own family, I know what happens. But we're resilient, amazing creatures. And we are given the hardwired reality of constant transformation, constant transcendence, constant healing. But it hurts. We can cry and we can throw tantrums. So, and we can also, and it doesn't mean you're supposed to go, oh yes, I know this. And you're supposed to sit there like the most trained Buddhist monk in the world or the most trained Carmelite. You cannot get there that way. You are who you are. If you are born from expressive parents and generations, and you wave your hands and you fall on the ground and your tears are rushing down into rivers and you're pounding the ground because that's what you do, that's you. And if you come from another line of temperament, that you put your chin up and you internalize it a certain way and you walk through with no tears and complete and utter stoicism, that isn't bad either. That's you. And we don't honor any of those anymore. If you go, we have such a narrow margin of what we think is normal. And then, of course, I challenge anyone to define those things for me. Tell me, expert, exactly what is normal. What is normal when you just had a miscarriage? What is normal when you wake up 5 years later after an abortion and regret what you've done? What's normal for reaction? What's normal when your mother dies? What's normal when you are skipping along and you're on your way to your tryouts for, you know, the Olympics for gymnastics, and you just happen to decide to run off and get a bottle of water and you twist your ankle and it's broken and your entire career is gone? What's normal for that reaction? We tend to think we know. We tend to like to make movies about what we think it is normal, but it's all fantasy, because what is normal for you may not be normal for someone else. Someone may do the sackcloth and ashes and paint their face blue out of mourning. Other people may put on a black veil, sit very quietly, and then thank you very much, and then walk in and take care of whatever, they folding clothes. It's not for me to say what's normal. And of course, there is margins, but they're way out here. Very abnormal things, of course, would be very dangerous things, but we're not talking about those. So when we talk about being overwhelmed, let's start with Philippians 4:6-7. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. Now, as I read that, it's a gift. It's an invitation. It's a Valentine. Here, sweetheart, don't really, here, just put your head on my chest. Now, when you tell your child that, and you know what their little heart is breaking for whatever reason, to I can't have the little toy at McDonald's, to that they're just had their first heartbreak, that doesn't change how anxious the child feels, does it? It doesn't feel like they feel like it's the end of the world. But you're giving them a Valentine, whether they know it or not. You are giving them soothing, healing water. Or if you have to clean out or watch the doctor clean out a wound because they fell off their bike and they somehow then they got bitten by a raccoon or something and it hurts like heck. But it's like, so you give by prayer and supplication. And as we're adults, we can say, I can't do this, God. This is my request to you. But thank you for everything. Thank you for even me being in the position to be able to make a request, to know that I can make a request. Isn't that awesome? Like the little child, rather be anxious by yourself, huddled in a cardboard box as an isolated person in some garbage heap somewhere, still feeling anxious, as opposed to the person who's home and just coming from their nice little bedroom to your kitchen and, you know, crying. Or you walk in and they're so upset because they broke up with their boyfriend and they're in third grade. So that's who we are to God. Now, Psalm 55:22, cast your cares on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous be shaken. Now, I read that like, well, that's not my psalm because I'm not righteous. So I haven't always acted righteously. And I've been, you know, that little child, like I don't care. And just, you know, kicking my little feet, metaphorical feet. But he doesn't say that all except you, Michelle, or you, Mary, or you, Jennifer, or you, whoever. It's no, Psalm 55 says, and David, I keep going back to David. David didn't always act righteously. He ended up being the cause of someone's death and more than one. But cast your cares on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous be shaken. Now leave the definition of righteous up to him, not up to you. Then we go again to Matthew 6:27. This is all a prelude to us getting into Robert J. Wicks. Matthew 6:27. And who of you by being worried can add a single hour to his life? And that to me, it's a very broad thing because we think about, oh, that's about being worried about when you're going to die and all. No, you can say, look, I don't need that because I'm not scared of dying. I've heard this many times. I love Jesus and I'm ready to go. I want to go anytime. What if he doesn't want you now? What if you have much more to do on this earth and some of it isn't comfortable to you and some of it is necessary for the advancement of all mankind, even if it's in a tiny little way. So you might be worried. Oh, I lost my job. My wife just walked out on me. My child has leukemia. And it doesn't say, I don't care about that. That's not about not being worried. What it means is you're not alone, that God will provide. God is a God of provisions. And like the Calvary or anything else, or those, no matter what war you're talking about, there's always that time in almost any war where people are sweating it. They made many a movie in Hollywood about this back in the day. People are sweating it. There's no food. There's pestilence. They're starving. They don't have any water. It's been cut off. They've got nothing. They are dying in droves. And at the last minute, here comes the Calvary. It's the cliche. Here comes the boat with the water or the food. Here comes the liberation. Here comes whatever. And it happens. So he's the God of provision. He's giving you the provisions. He may decide that your provisions are plentiful and you never run out of anything. But he also may decide that not that he's going to wish this on you, but that because your life and the world's life has caused you to be that person who was sold into slavery in 2016 or who's constantly being locked away, that through his not just will, but that there is always hope. That through other humanity who also have choices, that there are going to be groups who are going to work to get you out of it. And some people don't get out of it. But that doesn't mean that you aren't favored or that you don't have grace. So if you've done something irreparable, you've been in an irreparable situation you can never get out of, that doesn't mean that he isn't coming to you now. It just means that the very thing you wished would have been saved or changed didn't get saved or changed. But you are here, you are now, you are listening to this. So you have hope and be anxious for nothing. And even though you might watch everything of yours be deconstructed in thanksgiving, ask him, you know, don't let this hurt so much. Tell me, show me, help me, put someone in my path that will help me. So we're going to get to more of that on the other side of the break. I will start right in with lesson 2, recognize your renewal zones, and get into some real practical things we can do to renew ourselves in the face of overwhelmedness and trial. So Dr. Michelle, see you on the side.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, your host, and we're walking together on Dr. Michelle Live, this road of life. It goes and goes and goes and goes, and it will continue on. So that is something that is a trip. I find it beautiful, and I'm so happy for you because you are wearing some clothes, basically, that the universe bought at Walmart, and when they no longer work for you, you will always be. And that is amazing thing, how you got breathed into existence. You will always be. And that is an amazing, beautiful thing. And I'm really happy for you. It's hard. It's one of those paradoxes. We just don't have the ability to keep it in our heads. Just like kids don't have ability to really get that they're going to die. They might be able to say it. They might have learned it. They may have watched a grandfather go or something. But I'm telling you, a lot of times they just don't. You know that. You've been there. You know what it was like. Never going to die. And so many songs. All those songs in the 60s, never going to get old. So it's like, okay, well, how's that working for you now? So the fact is, though, your soul isn't going to get old. So that's pretty cool. All right. So how do we get these when we have these changes that are coming on and we have these just big old shocks and we get overwhelmed, or we just get this ongoing dragged out, just sucking of life away? You have moments of change that we can't always grasp. And when people are saying, well, you've got to have a different attitude, you have to do this. And we're going, but how are you kidding me? Would you please give me something? Throw me a bone, as they used to say, throw me a bone. Just give me a hint. I had soldiers that would come in to talk to me when I worked with post-traumatic stress disorder and soldiers. And they would say, many of them, I need tools. Will you fix me? And you need to fix me in 10 minutes. Well, I would let them know, of course, I can't fix you in 10 minutes. And many of them I had good, long relationships with. And we laugh at that sometimes. Like, well, you know, you're still here. And you said that you wouldn't be here if I couldn't fix you in 10 minutes. But the reality is that they had a big point. That was, give me some tools. I need tools. I need to, it's like if you are in a mine shaft and it all caves in on you, you do not need someone there telling you a physics lessons on how the mine shaft didn't work, or architecture lessons, or oxygen, when the oxygen is going to, you do not need a scientist in a white lab coat with a big screen describing to you how and why your oxygen is going to run out. When you're down there in the mine, you need the tools. You need somebody who may not be able to add, but knows how to work machinery to get you the heck out of there. You need relief. You need the boulders off your legs. You need to breathe oxygen. You don't care about anything else at that time. Now, that sounds odd because my vocation is all about words and all about looking and feeling and going into it. But the most important thing is getting you first to the place where you will end up being the most functional. And if that means that you have to go back into the past, we do that. Because sometimes you need to see the patterns to understand that you're not just, you know, a person who goes from avalanche to avalanche. There are these touchstones on the way. There are these life preservers on the way, that you have a pattern of doing things a certain way, and that you just can't see. None of us can see that which we have never experienced. So if we're used to doing something in a certain way, waiting for the things that never happen, waiting for the things that never come, if we're used to doing that, then we have a difficulty when someone says, well, just change your attitude. It's like, well, okay, how are you freaking kidding me? How am I going to do that? And yeah, that's easy for you to say, because what happens is people then see the person telling them that as they come from a place of privilege rather than a place of hard knocks. And for me, I'd rather see someone who has had the hard knocks, who has been disadvantaged, and who has lived to tell me how they get through it. I'd rather see that than someone who is coming from not ever having a hard knock in their life and book learning everything. And even though, but then there's a place for them too. So I don't even want to say that. That's just my particular personality. I'd like to know, you know, a little bit of the hard knocks, because I've looked at a lot of theory. But someone else could be okay with theory. God comes to you and who you are. If he needs to approach you through the intellect, that's how it's going to happen. If he needs to approach you through action, that's how it's going to happen. If he needs to approach you through vision or visuals, you might just see a movie. You might just see somebody walking down a street. That's going to be your key. There are more keys than there are pieces of sand on this beach or molecules of oxygen in our atmosphere. There are more keys to your life than that. And he doesn't have to go searching. It'll be one little key, just like one little key can tip somebody over from being watching a movie to getting onto porn to having a porn addiction. One little key. There's another little key that can get you back. So just know that that's what hope is all about. So, all right. Recognize your renewal zone. Lesson 2 from Riding the Dragon, Robert J. Wick's 10 lessons for inner strength in challenging times. So I'm going to read to you. This is our little reading moment. When speaking, this is Robert J. Wick's. When speaking with helping professionals after the September 11th attack on the U.S., I saw the feelings of futility in their faces. This was not surprising. Now, I want to put in, as Dr. Michelle, a little addition here. Right after September 11th, within a few weeks, I had a conference that was scheduled in New York. And I went and I saw what he's talking about. Driving from Kentucky to New York, over the bridge, seeing our American flag, bigger than life, over the bridge, then smelling diesel fuel, then seeing people just, first of all, very magnanimous and generous in the area that I was in, but going down and seeing people with their masks on, trying to read the paper, the vacancy in their eyes, looking at storefronts and seeing what looked like Christmas snow, you know, those flocking that you get at Christmas and storefronts to make it look like you've got snow there. But it was ash. Seeing that. And seeing taking taxis and cabs and listening to the people talk about things. I mean, it's an experience that will stay with me forever. And I wasn't working with those people. So here he says, I saw the feelings of futility in their faces. And that's why I had to stop, because I did too. But he's working with them. And then he goes on. I had seen such looks before. During my 2 visits to Cambodia to work with employees of social service organizations working there, I saw how drained they were by their efforts to reach out to the Khmer people. Now, those of you who know about Khmer Rouge, it's unbelievable, who were suffering from years of torture and horror. Some workers had never taken off 2 days in a row because they felt guilty that they were not doing enough. How many of you can identify with that feeling? I saw it again in the faces of relief workers evacuating to the U.S. from Rwanda and Angola after atrocities and violence pulled those countries apart. Like most survivors of catastrophes, they viewed their situation with a feeling of luck and guilt for having been spared, for being able to move on. And how many of you feel that? As I listened to their stories of guilt, frustration, and futility in such situations, often I felt myself pulled in the same downward direction. I started to think, what can I do? I'm just listening. What good is that? As soon as I became aware of this negative mood change, I stepped back within myself and realized how important the gift of a listening presence is. I also became thankful that I've carefully taken care of myself. By availing myself of the safe zones in my life, I can stay afloat to both relish and share my life with others who are undergoing rough times. After all, what good can you be to others if you've let yourself burn out in the process? I mean, really, you don't have to be Robert J. Wick's. You can just be a mother of 2 and identify with this. Sometimes the stress we face at work mingles with what we must face in our own personal lives. And if we're not careful, we can sink psychologically and spiritually. Once, after a very intense couple of weeks in my own life, I decided to deal with the stress by stepping back slightly from my normal routine. Though usually an early riser, I rescheduled my early appointments and planned to sleep in a bit later the coming morning. Instead, a ringing phone woke me even earlier than normal. Still half asleep, I couldn't figure out what the caller was trying to tell me, and I said so. She finally realized she had woken me up and started her story again. Quote, "There was a tornado yesterday here in Maryland, and it killed two college students who were sisters and injured their father." And then he says, "I'm not sure why you're calling me about this." Then, quote, "Well, the young women were daughters of a woman with whom your wife taught." And then he says, "That's how the day and next few weeks got started." And then he will go on to tell him, we're going to pick up most of this on the other side of the break. But he says, "When I arrived at the college later that morning, there was an email from someone at the Pentagon regarding the impact that the terrorist attack continued to have on his coworkers. This was quickly followed by a visit from someone who debriefed White House staffers following threats to their safety. As I sat with all of this, the phone rang. It was my wife calling to tell me that her sister, who was at the heart of the family, had died in New York City. In several hours, we would be on the road." Now, I'm going to finish what he did about it and what he's going to tell you to do about it on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You can call 573-4BREAD-4. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle, and you are walking this road with me, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. And would that I could listen to my own words. This is why I love God's, well, not just why, but, you know, things that I say that I help with other people. The hardest thing is in your own life. And Robert J. Wicks, thank you, Dr. Wicks, is helping me to see, yeah, it's universal, because we get this idea, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sleep in a little bit, or I'm going to take care of myself. And then boom, you have one thing after another. And sometimes those are just signs. Those are not just even nuances. They're like big boulders falling out of the sky on your head. The old comedy show Monty Python from 40 years ago used to have in the beginning a cartoon little character of this little, you know, British happy march. And meanwhile, it has all these little silly characters, little weird things happening. At the very end, this 1,000-pound weight comes out of the sky and just drops on the person. And sometimes you feel like that. I do. So there's change all around us. We have signs all around us that we don't listen to. We have things in our own life that is difficult, but we do have strength, and we do have ways to maneuver within our intuitions and our insights and those people around us and God's watchful eye and his promises. If you believe in his promise, if somebody told me this yesterday, if you believe in his promises, then you just believe in his promises. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but you got to believe in them. So that was odd information, but it really is true. All right. So Robert J. Wicks goes on to describe, as we did before the break, this he was going to set the alarm earlier, and he ends up with some phone call and just one thing after another. And these are big hair-raising things. They're not like things that you and I experience every single day. These are people that are dying and people that are coming back from atrocities and mass murders and all this. And he's just, he can't catch a break, basically. Nobody's throwing him a bone at this point. So then he talked about how he went into, after all these things stumbling his little pathway of taking care of himself, he gets a call from his wife that his sister-in-law, who has been was the heart of the family, had died. And in several hours, he was going to be they were going to be back. They were going to be on the road going to New York. Then he says, my first thought after this quick succession of events was, quote, let me go home before anything else happens. So after arranging for the necessary coverage while I would be away, I went down to my car, only to find a student sitting stunned and crying in the car next to mine. She was from New Zealand and had just received word that her father was dying. Shocked and upset, she was uncertain about whether or not she should make the 24-hour flight home or wait. After we reflected about this for a few minutes, I offered a few words of support and went home. There I found out that traveling to New York would not be easy. Officers of the Bridge and Tunnel Authority were stopping automobiles and doing random checks because of a bomb threat. Consequently, traffic entering the city was backed up for hours, so we took the train. During my sister-in-law's wake, I spoke with my family members who were involved in the rescue and security details at the World Trade Center. Their stories were poignant, powerful, and moving, but I didn't realize how deeply those stories affected me until one of my nephews, Larry Lanza began to speak about the search dogs. And I'm going to read you this. This is from, he's quoting his nephew. Quote, then there was the problem with the dogs, Uncle Bob. What problem? When they couldn't find anyone alive, they became depressed, wouldn't even drink water, and had to be evacuated to an area away from the scene where we could replenish their fluids intravenously. Quote, where did you evacuate them to, was my response. To be honest, I really didn't care where they were evacuated to. However, I could feel myself sliding spiritually and psychologically into my own darkness. I reacted by asking a cognitive question to catch the slide. And that's the subject of the next chapter, which, by the way, we will read on this program. In order to avoid overcoming or becoming overfilled and overwhelmed emotionally while listening to these sad stories, that's what he did. He put in that little slide, well, where did they take him to? It stops you from the emotional sadness of thinking about those dogs and putting you into the here and now of just getting that emotion away. And we all do that, don't we? We ask irrelevant questions just to help us get concrete and kick in the non-sad part of our brain into the practical, action-packed part of our brain. The next weekend, after returning from the funeral, I received a call from Toronto. The caller introduced herself as the head of a large school board and went on to say, quote, our keynote speaker's brother just died. My first thought was to ask, quote, what has this to do with me, unquote. But instead, I simply said, quote, I'm not sure why you're telling me, unquote. Quote, well, we'd like you to fly up tomorrow and take her place giving the keynote to 10,000 educators in the Air Canada arena, unquote. So I flew to Toronto. A week later, I was in Oklahoma to give a two-day workshop. As soon as I arrived, those organizing the event brought me to the now famous site in Oklahoma City, the memorial to the 1995 bombing of the Mura Federal Building. The memorial features a collection of individual clear lucite chairs, and as I stood there looking numbly at them, one for each person who had died, I noticed some were smaller and asked why they were different. The woman with me explained that these were for the children who had died. And as we walked closer to them, I saw the grieving relatives had put stuffed animals on some of them. And I could feel the slide again. So can I. Sometimes, especially on days like that, an interesting image comes to mind when I think of my own life and those of the professional helpers and healers who come to me for mentoring. It's an image of a person standing in a pool facing the deep end of the water level just below his nose. As he stands there, he sees a line of people ready to cannonball off the diving board in order to inundate him where he stands. We all have to deal with real crises and daily stresses. We all may not be the fireman cleaning up the World Trade Center, finding human arms and heads, discovering a fellow fireman only recognizable by his uniform. But all of us are somehow affected by life's traumatic events. In addition to this reality, the out-of-the-ordinary pressures we have at work don't allow us to put our personal pressures on hold. For example, when I was experiencing such surprising demands I just described, I was still responsible for my job, my college, and my role in my family. Such responsibilities do not disappear in times of crisis. When the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston called me in 2002, to help their priests stay afloat during the pedophilia crisis, which was demoralizing innocent, hardworking priests, I reminded them of this number, and I'm going to finish our program today, but we're going to take up the rest tomorrow. He says, when you are under a great deal of stress and suspicions now, even though you are innocent, as Cardinal O'Connor said back in 1993 when New York was facing a similar crisis, quote, it's getting increasingly difficult for some priests and even some bishops to hold their heads up. Everyone is under suspicion. A grenade could explode at any time, and another and another. However, the stress does not end there for you. Many of you have sick and dying parents. You have people that really need you. Overwhelming demands of your parish, etc. I'm going to cut to the chase here. He says, add all of this up and you have a psychologically dangerous and spiritually depleting situation. If you don't take the time to care and renew and develop new awareness to strengthen your inner self, you will succumb to this. So we're going to take a lot of this up tomorrow, but what we have to do is go to what he's going to help us with. He said at the very end of this chapter, and we'll fill in the blanks tomorrow, he said one of the things that when he's describing someone else that was having an issue, that he did, one of the things he did surprise me with, though, was a question that really helped me put my activities in perspective. He's talking about another experience now. He said he asked, this person asked Dr. Wicks, quote, what good things are you doing now? What good things are you doing now? As I started to launch into an obsessive, naturally well-organized list of my recent academic and professional accomplishments, he interrupted me by saying, no, not that stuff. I mean, what really good things have you done? When have you gone fishing last? What museums have you visited lately? What good movies have you seen in the past month? The quote, good things, unquote, he was speaking about the last time I saw him alive were different from the ones in my arrogant good health thought about. Unfortunately, I have a lot of company in this regard. All right. So we're going to talk about we're going to leave you with a cliffhanger today, because this is what he's getting to. All of us, during all these things I read, can see themselves, can also compare themselves like we always do, which drives me crazy when people say, well, I have no room to have a problem because look at all the terrible things these people were going through. What he's coming to in each one of these things is the things that we, and especially if Catholics, have grown to believe are selfish, awful things, like going to see a movie in the midst when everyone else is having crisis, or complaining about your own life and saying, wait, no, I have some issues here. He's saying that's all part of your mental health. How are we going to approach this then? How are we going to get those renewal buttons going? How are we going to tap into the God-given strength and intuitions and insights that are going to allow us to have a newness of our own horizon, even in the midst of others' tragedy or our own? That, my friends, we are going to discover tomorrow. This is Dr. Michelle. Listening to Dr. Michelle Live. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.